This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Good morning! Happy Friday! And I say that with all of the energy and enthusiasm that I can muster and not be yelling at you. I was yelling near you, not at you. We are one day down into the NCAA tournament, one full day, 16 games up, 16 games down, and we've got 16 more on the docket today, which is really cool, including three of the top seeds. Duke will play today, Virginia, UNC, so all three top seeds that hail from the ACC will be in action on Friday, whether you're on the West Coast and the tip-offs begin just after 9 a.m., or whether you are on the East Coast, somewhere in between, of course. But the 12 hours of basketball is heavenly for many of you who either take the day off or make special plans to travel with friends, maybe to Vegas or now to another state that allows legalized gambling on sports. Either way, it was kind of funny to see the people who are in our newsroom and not in our newsroom, because we definitely have people who take off during these couple days of March Madness because it's all-consuming, or it can be if you allow it. What did you see? Favorite moments? We certainly had some history. We had some drama. We had some names that you should know. If you don't already know the name, for instance, of Ja Morant, well, eighth triple-double in tournament history and the first since Draymond Green in 2012. 17 points, 16 assists, 11 rebounds in Hartford in a 12-5 matchup. So how about that? One of those 12-5 matchups. But this one wasn't dramatic at the end because of Ja Morant and his teammates. The 16 assists is phenomenal. But if I'm not mistaken, I looked at this before. They had 23 assists on 30 made field goals, which is incredible. Talk about sharing the basketball. I mean, that's the goal of the Golden State Warriors when they get on the court. To have that type of balance really does make it difficult for a defense. And they were able to run away with their victory against 5-seed Marquette in the West region. So that's one big, I would say one big highlight, one big name that you will need to know from Thursday. We'll see what Murray State does moving forward. Now, the other 12-5 matchup that looked like it was going to be an upset for the lower seed was, I mean, it was all the mayhem that you could muster in the final 8 seconds of a game. This was insane. So Auburn has built what is a precarious lead, and New Mexico State will not go away. But Auburn did not help because the Tigers made dumb mistakes and bonehead moves in those final few seconds, like fouling a player who's taking a three-point shot with a second to go. You're up by two. What do you know not to do? Foul the guy who's taking the three. Except it could have been the right strategy when that player ended up missing two of the three free throws. Oh, talk about a facepalm Friday. Oh my gosh. Multiple times New Mexico State had the chance to win this game. So I want you to hear it because it was crazy at the end. I'll set it up for you so you know. There was a missed free throw by Auburn that kept the lead at 2 points. And so with roughly 8 seconds to play, maybe it was 6 seconds, with just a handful of seconds left on the clock, New Mexico State takes the inbounds and has the opportunity to go the length of the court.
They do harass the man he's trying to find, and Harris, chest pass in, 6 seconds. Harris across midcourt, 4 seconds, down the lane, whip on the right wing, Terrell Brown for the win, no, but a whistle and a foul! Terrell Brown's shot is short, and he's fouled with 1.1 seconds. The Aggies' leading scorer will go to the line, he will shoot three, and he could win it for New Mexico State. 1.1 seconds, front court left, near baseline entry, Harris calls the break, 1.1, finds Queen, quarter three for the win, air ball, and Auburn wins it. The Aggies crestfallen, McCants doubled over mid lane, streaming emotion for both teams, and a gasp for air as Auburn largely dominates the game and hangs on to win by a skinny point.
Heck of a college basketball game. You know, that's kind of what March Madness is all about. Really proud of our guys. I think a lot of teams would have packed tent and went home when it looked pretty bleak there for a while.
That is the voice, what's left of it, of the head coach of New Mexico State, Chris Jans. So the craziness of the end, it's the type that causes nightmares for an athlete, for a player. And there were multiple Aggies who were involved. And so they dribble the length of the court, and A.J. Harris has a wide open layup. Would have tied the game if he had made it. The Aggies are down by two. So instead, he whips it around out to the right wing where his teammate and their leading scorer, Terrell Brown, has an open three. He gets fouled. Can you imagine Bruce Pearl? I actually don't recall seeing what Bruce Pearl did to react in that moment, but he whips it around to his teammate. His teammate gets fouled with a second to go shooting a three, except he gets on the free throw line and he misses two of three. So they're still trailing by one. But you know what? They get the offensive rebound. Oy! All the Tigers had to do was A, not foul on a three-pointer, but B, not give up that rebound, except they do. And so the Aggies get another chance. And then you hear the inbound with John Sadak on Westwood One. Trevelyn Queen has a chance for a three. It was a great look. It was a perfectly drawn up inbounds play, and it was perfectly executed. And he has the chance for the three, but it's an air ball. And so the number of momentum swings just in those last 8 seconds was crazy. Yes, it was a 12-5 game. And yes, it's the kind of emotionally draining game that you don't forget if you're watching, but also not if you're playing in it. And so my heart went out to the Aggies. The Tigers just made so many mistakes down the end, but they had built enough of a lead that at least they were able to survive and advance. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Other big stories: the Fletcher McGee history book. This is cool. Fletcher McGee, who else has that name? It's why it's memorable. But he becomes the Division I all-time leader in three-pointers made. So in early in the first half of Wofford's game, and this was actually a 7-10 matchup, so Wofford against Seton Hall, Wofford was the higher seed. Early in the second half, he sinks his 505th career triple, which is the new Division I record. He finishes with 24 points and 7 threes. So by the time the game is over, he's had 509 three-pointers made in his career, which is, again, the new record. And so he'll have a chance to add to that because Wofford picks up its first ever NCAA tournament win. So talk about the highest of highs for not just Fletcher McGee, but also for the Terriers, who are out of the Southern Conference, which maybe evokes some memories of Davidson, because you remember it was Steph Curry who was shooting the lights out a decade ago as Davidson was making a run to the Elite Eight. So here comes Wofford, first ever tournament win, and Fletcher McGee is the name to remember.
I was aware of it just from, you know, the media and everyone texting me and stuff saying I had three more or whatever. So when I hit it, I noticed the crowd was definitely louder than just a normal three in the second half. But, you know, I feel like I didn't get too caught up in it. You know, we still, you know, it was a close game.
It definitely was one of those that Wofford took control of late. But for a while, I mean, Seton Hall did have a bit of a run there in the second half. So it's the highest of highs and the lowest of lows, or as I often like to refer to March Madness, the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat, the old ABC Wide World of Sports theme. It's After Hours on CBS Sports Radio. Phone number is 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4CBS. Maryland ends up, I was going to say upsetting, but it sounds weird. Ends up upsetting. Nope. Ends up getting by a popular Cinderella pick. Now, you remember Belmont had to play through the first four in Dayton. The Braves did that, The Bruins did that. I think a lot of people were looking at them as a potential team that could make a run. However, they run into Maryland and they aren't able to get out of that that round of 64. Yale gave a scare to LSU. That was pretty interesting to watch. How about the defending champ in Villanova? This was also a battle against St. Mary's, another upset that a lot of people had circled as a potential. But the one thing that you just can't replicate if you are Murray State is the experience of two seniors for the Wildcats who've won two titles in their careers. And so Jay Wright, his staff too as well, right, understanding exactly what it takes to survive all the way to the point at which you are the one shining moment. You're the last team that's still alive. And so that gives, I think, these young players an edge. It's maybe not as big a deal when you get to, I feel like experience is a valuable tool. Maybe it's not as big a deal when you're talking about multiple teams that are blue bloods and that have experience on this tournament stage. But when you're talking about a team like Villanova versus St. Mary's, the experience disparity is so great that it really does make a difference. There are nerves. There are moments of anxiety. And when it comes to the Cats, especially those seniors like Phil Booth, who had 20 points, they can draw on, let's face it, going back to 3 years ago when they had to win on a buzzer beater in Houston, right? Chris Jenkins hitting that shot. So you understand it's never say die, and you're not out of it until the end, and you have you have everything that you need to be able to win a game if you're playing your brand of basketball. It's very much about confidence thing as well. So the Wildcats move on as a 6 seed, and there are a couple of double-figure seeds that people were looking at as potential Cinderellas that don't make it past Thursday. So what was your favorite moment or your favorite game? A lot of you are weighing in on Facebook and also on Twitter. There's dog pictures galore. I asked, you delivered. And the reason I asked only is because, I posted some pictures of my own dog because yesterday was 7 years since I adopted her, and it was a life-changing decision, and she's the one who runs my life now. And so as I posted those pictures and was telling you a story about Penny, you all responded with it's just a plethora of photos of your dogs from all over the country and their creative names and their cute faces. And so you're making me smile on this Friday morning now. So I appreciate that. You can check it out on Twitter, A-Law Radio, as I mentioned, Facebook. And then we'll get back to your calls about the NFL. So there are two proposals on the table from the competition committee to the owners coming up for their meetings in Phoenix that would amend instant replay to include judgment calls. But which ones, and what is the caveat? I'll explain coming up next. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast. The fickle, the fraudulent, the frankly false.
Well, I was going to call you J-Lo, back to A-Lo.
Looking back on the feedback faux pas of the week. It's time for Face Palm Friday.
This one is credit to producer Chris, because I did not know this happened, but he swears that it is worthy of a Face Palm Friday. So let's set it up for you here on After Hours, CBS Sports Radio. Will Ferrell, the actor, there's not another one, as Ron Burgundy. So he's resuscitating his role as Ron Burgundy, Anchorman. Calls an LA Kings game against the Sharks on Thursday night. But he's late to the broadcast booth, and he has to explain why to his partners, I'm using my air quotations, Alex Faust and Jim Fox. So this is your first exhibit, and maybe only, for Face Palm Friday.
And Ron, we know you're a big connoisseur of everything. Hair.
Thank you.
Art.
Thank
poetry,
you,
poetry, sports.
Right.
What brings you to a Kings game here tonight?
Well, to be quite honest, I apologize for being late. I thought you guys still played at the Forum. So I've been down in Inglewood.
Gotcha.
And just driving around.
You should have mentioned that.
Sure. I walked in, I spent a half an hour at what I thought was a King's Day. Yeah. It was a Sade concert.
Oh.
So
that's not the worst thing,
so
I guess.
It's glad to be here at Staples. Is that a
Staples
Center.
Store. After commercial break, by the way. So we're gonna have to come back.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Let's do that.
We'll pick this up on the way back. We gotta pay some bills.
Chris, where did you find that? That is fantastic.
I found it on Twitter.
Of course you did. Where's the voice god?
Face Palm Friday.
Thank you, voice god. Absolutely. What do you call it? Stopples? Stopples.
Stopless.
Stopless. Oh my gosh. I remember when the Anchorman came out, the first one, the original one, and I was trying not to laugh because the antics are so offensive, right? The way that they treat Christina Applegate and some of those things to varying degrees that happened to me in my career. But he is just hysterical. I mean, he owns that role. And yeah, it just good to hear him again. Stopless.
That escalated quickly. I mean, that really got out of hand fast.
It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. He thought they still played the forum. Okay, we definitely have to hear that again before the end of the show. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Yes, a bit of a face palm Friday. It's the time of the week when we throw all caution to the wind and just do all kinds of ridiculously fun stuff to usher you into the weekend. Okay, so here's the NFL, which, you know, has earned the reputation at times of being the no fun league. After much debate and deliberation, the competition committee will send two proposals to the owners. Now, keep in mind, despite the variety of proposals they may have considered to amend instant replay, they're only going to send the ones to the owners that they believe will get potentially enough votes to pass. So 32 owners, 32 franchises, obviously the Green Bay Packers have a different situation, but 32 franchises, they need 24 votes. In the affirmative, the ayes would have to be at 24 for them to pass any amendment to their rules. And in this case, there was such an uproar and outcry over what happened at the end of the NFC Championship. Remember the no PI call, no flag thrown against Nicole Rolby Coleman. And so they felt like they had to at least consider the idea of expanding instant replay to include pass interference and other judgment calls. So here's what they've come up with. Two different proposals. Version A would expand instant replay to include only pass interference. So that would be the only judgment call that would be allowed. The second version would actually extend the umbrella of instant replay to not just pass interference, but to roughing the passer calls. So we had, and this man has called before, he's incensed over the phantom hit to the head of Tom Brady in the AFC Championship. He insists that's why the Patriots won the game and that it would have changed the course of history if they had not called that roughing the passer foul. Anyway, roughing the passer fouls and then also hits against defenseless receivers. So those are all judgment calls. And they're also calls that carry weighty penalties and at times actually can get a player thrown out based on the way they tweaked the rules last year. So again, pass interference, roughing the passer fouls, and unnecessary hits against the defenseless receivers would all come under replay. But here's the caveat. This is why it's almost ironic. The replay would not be invoked unless there was a flag. Wait for it. Wait for it. Yep, that's right. NFC Championship wouldn't have come under this particular expanded replay anyway. So it feels like a compromise because the NFL has been reluctant to make any judgment calls subject to review. But if this is their way of granting a makeup call, to fans after what happened in the NFC Championship, well, then I bet the eyes will have it. I bet that it'll pass. At least one of these will pass. I would say it's probably more likely that the first version passes where it's only PI calls that are subject to review. Still, do you know how many freaking PI flags are thrown in an average game? It feels like 1.5 million sometimes. Gosh, to have them all subject to replay, that's a facepalm Friday. I don't know if they're going to make it a situation where now the challenge flags that coaches have would also extend to PI, and that they could call for a replay and a challenge on PI. So I'm not exactly sure how they intend to do it, or if it's going to be every PI call that would be subject to replay. That seems That seems like overkill, but we'll see if either one of these proposals passes. I mentioned this. I finally found a little line about the sky judge, because that was something they were considering strongly at the combine as well. They were at least debating what the AAF uses, but apparently they have no idea where they could come up with enough officials that they could have a sky judge at every single game. And so for now, that's tabled. 855-212-4227. It's our toll-free line brought to you by Geico. With a quick way you can save money, switch to Geico. If you need homeowners, renters, or motorcycle insurance, you can get it all at geico.com. Dre is listening in Fort Worth. Dre, welcome to After Hours CBS Sports Radio.
Hey, what's up, Amy? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
You know, I'm going to ask a basic question.
Uh-oh.
What is the purpose of all of these big 100-yard, 50-yard, 70-yard screens in all these stadiums if they're not going to use them when things like this happen? Because honestly, you look at the screen, it tells you what happened. And I wish they would have had this pass interference rule back when my Jaguars got robbed by the Patriots, because we all know a Boye did not interfere with Brandon Cooks, and we got robbed. They always robbing people for the Patriots. But I like to say this, too. In that Rams game, see, that's another case that it should fall, because even though there was no flag, that's why I'm saying just look at the screen, because anybody who looks at that is an egregious play. And it's like, I just don't understand how the NFL just cannot and will not fix that. Because now I'm going to say this, like you said earlier. Now you were wrong, Amy. They wasn't in overtime yet. But that play, I say this, the Saints messed themselves up with bad play calling. Because had they ran the football some instead of throwing it, the Rams wouldn't have had enough time to, after that play, go down and kick a field goal themselves. You know, that wouldn't have happened. And then they don't go into overtime. But it's like, you know, because a lot of Saints fans, like you were saying earlier, they say that, no, that's not the only thing that happened. It was some bad play calling. And then I just wanted to throw this in. When they were talking about the Kaepernick settlement, I mean.
Who's they?
Are you thinking that he's, well, like when earlier when you were talking, I actually saw that myself in the news earlier. Are you thinking that they gave such a small amount because they plan on giving them a job, or are you just thinking they just settled for that much just because that's all they gave them?
No. Kaepernick, I said, might have decided to take a settlement because he wants to get back into the NFL. So we know Eric Reed has a job. He's back in the league. I mean, he wasn't out of the league for that long, but he's in the league. He's got a deal with the Panthers. Maybe, I'm saying, Kaepernick took what now feels like a very small settlement compared to what the expectations and speculation were. It's a relatively small settlement, not even as much as what he was making in 2016 as a quarterback with the Niners. Maybe he decided he wanted to end the grievance as quickly as possible because he would like to get back in and play. And as long as this grievance was out there, it was less likely that he was going to get a job. Or maybe the side felt like they didn't have enough evidence to be able to prove collusion, so they were going to take what they could get.
I personally thought they did have enough. Because, I mean, to
me, have you seen the evidence?
Like I said before. Huh?
Did you see the evidence?
Well, no, I mean, I didn't see the evidence, but like I always say, some of the quarterbacks that was being signed by some of these teams, because, like, you know, some of the teams, they would talk to them, and it's like they was almost echoing the same sentiment when it came to Kaepernick. Well, we don't know what type of shape he's in. We don't know if he's ready.
Right, but that doesn't mean collusion, though. There would have to be proof that they all agreed to use, or not all, that a couple of them agreed to use that same line in order to keep him out of the NFL. That's not an original thought. Lots of people had that thought. So the whole point is you'd have to prove they were working together to keep him out of the NFL.
Yeah, see, that's why I think, like, you know how, like, some of those phone records were, because I personally feel, Amy, if they would have got them phone records, I think they probably would have seen some text messages that were, you know, pointing towards that. I mean, you know, that's just a gut feeling of mine, because some of these quarterbacks.
Okay, but apparently that's not what Kaepernick and Reed's camp and attorneys thought at the end. Otherwise, they might not have taken the settlement. So we just don't know their thought process yet. My whole point was only that, according to the Wall Street Journal, this wasn't a settlement that was anywhere close to what people were were throwing out there, which was roughly $80 million. Thank you so much for your phone call. Sorry we have to let you go because someone else needs to talk. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, CBS Sports Radio. We have got March Madness on the brain, all kinds of mayhem, but I wouldn't have made it through yesterday without coffee. Ja Morant and Fletcher McGee, names you need to know. And of course, 16 more games today.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
And Ron, you know, we know you're a big connoisseur of everything. Hair.
Thank you.
Art.
Thank
poetry.
You,
sports.
Right.
What brings you to a Kings game here tonight?
Well, to be quite honest, and I apologize for being late. I thought you guys still played at the Forum. So I've been down in Inglewood and just driving around.
You should have mentioned that.
I walked in, I spent a half an hour at what I thought was a King's Day. Yeah. It was a Chardet concert.
Oh,
so
yeah. Well, that's not the worst thing,
so
I guess.
It's glad to be here at Staples. Is that
Staples
Center.
We're on a commercial break, by the way, so we're going to have to come back.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Let's do that.
We'll pick this up on the way back. We got to pay some bills.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
It's too good not to hear again. It's After Hours on CBS Sports Radio. Thank you, Voice God. Also, many of you have sent photos of your dogs, and some of them sleep in the funniest positions. So I'm enjoying them. I'm smiling. I'm laughing out loud. But I had to pass this particular comment along from Bill. He sends a picture of what appears to, it's maybe a black lab mix. And he says, here's Harper, who we rescued 4 years ago. When Bryce signed with the Phillies, her name almost got changed to Ovi. Could you imagine the poor dog? Because you're a sports fanatic. You almost made your dog change its name to Ovi. Well, I mean, I have a ton of nicknames for my dog. Not kidding. I probably have a dozen nicknames for my dog. Her name is Penny, but she answers to a bunch of other things. But could you imagine the dog's confusion? Harper and Ovi do not sound anything alike. I mean, we're crazy. We are crazy sports fans. Thanks again for all your photos. So there's a montage of pictures on Facebook, and then you're also sending me your photos on Twitter. Penny is pinned to the top of my Twitter page, A-Law Radio. It's After Hours on CBS Sports Radio. The debate over NFL replay never gets old. It never gets old. You guys never run out of ideas, which I appreciate. So we'll squeeze in a few more calls here before we get to the top of the hour. Shane is listening in California. Welcome to After Hours, CBS Sports Radio. Oh, apparently his idea wasn't one that was going to stand the test of time. Josh is in Boston. Welcome to After Hours.
Good morning, Amy. Happy Friday.
Thank you.
So I'm just calling because, one, I woke up way too early for my shift this morning. So it was nice to be able to listen to you this morning. It's been a while. I'm just calling on regards to the whole NFL possible throwing flags for, the possible pass interference.
Replay?
For me, mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, for me, I feel like when are we going to draw the line say, all right, just let the officials do their work. They're getting paid enough money as it is. Why do we need more officials to kind of call the games? And also, if that does take effect, you know, because of the whole gambling coming of late, how that's going to affect that as well, because that's a big topic, obviously.
Sure.
I just kind of wanted to hear what you had to say about that.
Well, I'm in agreement with you about enough is enough with the replay. I feel like you're treading in some pretty rocky waters to add judgment calls to replay, because that's the whole point. You're relying on someone's judgment. So why should it be an official in New York or an official who's not at the game site as opposed to an official who's there on site, depending on how they do it? But also, it's still a judgment call. It's still my opinion, my perspective versus your opinion and your perspective. And even if you get seven guys together, eight guys together, nine guys together. It's still a judgment call. Why make it more complicated? Now, granted, there have been judgment calls that are missed, and the reason there's such a reaction is because of what happened in the NFC Championship game, but that was a no call, so this new tweak of the rule wouldn't even cover that. So I feel like at some point it's just overkill. Judgment calls by definition are not right or wrong necessarily, except for on the rare occasions, like, you know, we could see what happened in that NFC Championship. It was the rare occasion in which we all agree. But Josh, I feel like it's pretty common that when you see one thing, I see something else, and we can both believe that what we saw is correct. So I'm fine with the human error. The officials generally do a really good job. They grade roughly 90%. And for the most part, now, this was obviously a huge error in a high-profile situation, and there was no way the NFL could hide from it. But for the most part, it's not, to me, an issue, although I know to a lot of other fans it is.
Right.
Plus, there's way too many pass interference calls already, so I'm fine to err on the side of fewer PI calls and fewer replay for PI calls.
I agree, and I mean, I've been lucky. I mean, I'm a lifetime Patriots fan.
So wait. Your time is coming,
I've
Josh.
I've definitely been fortunate as far as the calls going our way, for sure. And a lot of people are definitely upset with it.
It's fine. But, whatever. I think the upset is mostly just jealousy.
No, absolutely. I mean, you're not, and that's the thing. You're not going to please everyone. There's no, and that's what the NFL is dealing with right now. You're never going to please everyone.
No, especially not with judgment calls. It's impossible.
Absolutely.
All right, sir. Well, you enjoy being your high horse there as a Patriots fan. Okay?
Thank you, Andy. You have a wonderful weekend.
You too. DJ's in Georgia. Welcome to After Hours CBS Sports Radio.
Hey, how's it going, Amy?
Good.
So I'm just kind of commenting on the collusion thing with Kaepernick.
Mm-hmm.
When it first broke over here in Georgia, a lot of the radio stations, 99 in the game, everybody was commenting on it, and a lot of the guys had a good point. If you were to, you brought his cause all the way to the end, and there was supposed collusion, he would have probably taken it all the way. Now, to take such a low pay amount, well, not a low pay amount, according to me, I would love it.
Yeah.
You know, to take a pay amount that is not substantial enough to see like it's feeding your cause, kind of makes it fall on deaf ears. You know what I mean? Because Ed, you know, you really had a job really quickly. And it doesn't make you look very good that you decided to end the grievance when you supposedly had all this evidence. Not to mention, you also signed a non-disclosure agreement. So
right. Now, we don't know, DJ, where the disclosure came from. Honestly, if you think about it, and as you're pointing out, it almost makes the NFL look better. Like, potentially Kaepernick and Reed and their attorneys didn't have enough of a case. Otherwise, why wouldn't they have pushed for more money or held out for this case to go the distance? So I almost tend to think someone from the NFL leaked it, to be honest. I wouldn't think that this is something Kaepernick or his attorneys would want to leak. Again, if the number is accurate, and this is a report from the Wall Street Journal, you could imagine what the, you know, even as we react to it, what the reaction would be and why it would be, in the NFL's best interest for that number to get out, not Kaepernick's. So the only thing I can think is, A, as you talk about that, you know, they didn't feel like they had enough evidence to prove collusion and didn't want to waste the time or the money to keep going with it. Because if they had lost, it would have done damage to his platform and his reputation. And not that it's fair, but that's just how public opinion is. That's how social media is. People pile on. It's a mob mentality. And so it would have done damage to him to not win, same as it would have done damage to the NFL to not win. So the idea was neither side suffers a major PR hit. But maybe there's some other motivation. Maybe he really wants to get back into the league and maybe recognizes this was a hurdle. I know it wasn't for Eric Reed, but maybe it is for Kaepernick. He's a quarterback. It's a different situation. His name is much more high profile when it comes to this. So maybe for him, it was about ending it so he could get back to playing football.
Which I believe would be very awesome. I mean, I don't think Kaepernick's a horrible quarterback. I do think a lot of the issue too is, you know, maybe a lot of these, he's better than most of the backup quarterbacks. We know that point. But a lot of the guys, teams, they look at this situation and maybe they don't want to have to deal with the PR stuff. and they're kind of just sitting there like, you know, we want a guy that wants to come in and play, but we also don't want to have to deal with the circus.
Agreed. And that's a major consideration for a lot of teams. And Tim Tebow's a completely different case study. But we know there were teams that wouldn't even touch like the idea of bringing him in, regardless of football, because they didn't want to deal with the circus that ensued. So absolutely that's the case. There are teams that shy away because they feel like it's more detrimental than it is positive, regardless of the skit. Well, I mean, if you're an elite athlete, or, you know, I mean, teams are willing to go to great lengths if they feel like, for Antonio Brown, say, or, a Kareem Hunt would be another example, if they feel like it's worth it. But I would agree with you that very often they make decisions based on how much of the circus they're going to have to deal with. DJ, thank you so much for your phone call in Georgia. I appreciate it. Have a great weekend. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio, and I've done it. I've managed to save the required amount of time for the big ending.
Come on, click, boom.
Here on After Hours, we end every show the same way.
Boom! I just laid down the A-law. Boom!
You know it. You love it. Now we're cranking it up a notch. After Hours presents the best highlights.
Foles running up and down the legs, a direct snap, and it goes to Clement, who gives it off to Burton, the tight end, who then throws in the end zone. Touchdown! Foles caught the ball!
And the most sizzling reaction.
Thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I really appreciate it. The greatest sports show in America.
Boom!
I'm very, excited. I'm always excited if he'd have stayed in Cleveland.
It's the boom moment of the week. Here's Amy Lawrence. Boom!
Stops at the free throw line. Up top to McGee. McGee left side for three. It's good! There's the record. The most threes made in NCAA history. It's number 505, and it gives Wofford a 43-30 lead.
I was aware of it just from the media and everyone texting me and stuff saying I had three more or whatever. So when I hit it, I noticed the crowd was definitely louder than just a normal three in the second half. But, I feel like I didn't get too caught up in it. We still, it was a close game.
Fletcher McGee. It feels like someone knocked over a microphone there at the podium. Fletcher McGee is now the record holder in the history books. Most three-pointers made in Division I history. The senior from Orlando had seven triples in last night's victory, 24 points. But just as importantly, and I'm sure he would tell you this, the first NCAA tournament win for the Wofford Terriers. Wowzers. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Really neat moments from the first day of March Madness. Tom McCarthy, by the way, with the call on the Westwood One Radio Network. We have two perfect brackets still remaining in our bracket challenge. So the After Hours bracket challenge. Be proud of yourselves, and we'll see how your brackets look after 16 more games coming up on Friday. In fact, they start just over 6 hours from now. Before we part and go our separate ways, I didn't have a chance to talk much about this, but it did catch my attention on Thursday. The Colts have added now former Chiefs linebacker Justin Houston. He's a four-time Pro Bowler. They give him a two-year deal. But just big picture with the Colts, they have a 10-game winning streak last year. Man alive, they could put together one heck of a 2019 campaign. We shall see. But that's football, and it's months from now. Let's focus on March Madness. Talk to you Sunday night when we're down to 16. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Boom!
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.